This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we are going to tell you how to fall in love from the movie. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time. Are you ready for One Dry Kiss?
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies, where we recap one singular how to love movie in the month of April. Today we are doing How to Fall in Love. And I am here with my co-host who I fell in love with at the age of two, Miss Tamara Crucio.
And I am here with my muse, my mentor, my munchichi, Corinne Edding. How do you like that? Flashback to the 80s. Munchichi.
I'm ready for this week to be over. I spent my day off doing dead sister stuff, so I'm good. I'm ready for the weekend.
I'm ready for the weekend, too. I've been having all kinds of freelance graphic design projects that I have thoroughly enjoyed, but grossly underrated time-wise. So, learning experience, Tamara. Learning experience. So, this is our month to learn how to love, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. And did we decide on whether or not we are actually going to take these rules that they give us and try to find love, Corinne? I can't remember.
So, here's what I think that we should do, because I feel like, of the two of us, you are the one who really needs these rules to love more than anything.
No, that's not happening.
I thought you said I had good ideas, but apparently I misheard you on that one.
No, I said that. Not all of them are good. You have good ideas. Not all your ideas are good. So you do have some spot on ones that are great, but not all. I'm sorry.
Unbreak my heart. Same ideas but are then go good ahead again.
We can unbreak that with these rules on how to fall in love again, Corinne. Ooh. Let's just put that heart right back together.
Speaking of which, do you have a synopsis for us?
I don't know why the synopsis was so hard for me, but it was. So forgive me if it is a hot mess. Harold, played by Eric Mabius, is a lonely accountant who's awkward and unlucky in love until one day his bestie, Willie, recommends he hire a dating coach. Harold goes to said dating coach, who seems like a scammer who runs her business from a sickeningly Pepto-Bismol pink office. He surprisingly does not hire her.
Huh.
Meanwhile, Annie, played by Brooke D'Orsay, has hit a dry patch in her life and has moved in with her sister until she can get back on her feet. After a chance meeting at a birthday party, Harold and Annie reunite. They went to high school together and had one disastrous date on his part. Annie hears about Harold's dating woes, offers to be his freelance dating coach, and he's reluctant. But he's had his eye on a foxy brunette at his favorite coffee shop for months, and he would really like to steam her foam, if you know what I mean. So Harold agrees, and they embark on an intense 8-session dating extravaganza. The time they spend together causes them to learn so much about themselves and each other until they develop feelings towards each other. Will Harold pursue the hot, frothy brunette? Or will he try to rekindle the flame that never got lit in high school with Annie? Get your pens and papers ready to take notes, because we're going to learn how to fall in love.
Ooh, that was nice.
I enjoyed this because Eric Mabius it took me a couple of minutes to realize why he looked so familiar, because he was one of the actors in one of my favorite back in the day sitcoms, Ugly Betty. And in Ugly Betty, he was the smarmy, womanizing boss that was like, hey, I can get any lady that I want. I can't be tied down.
Finger guns, finger guns.
Yeah, finger guns, finger guns, finger guns. So it was kind of nice to see him in this like subdued, kind of awkward, shy guy role. And I was like, he did a really good job too. I was like waiting for him to mess up. And I'm like, I see you. I see you. And he did great.
Very contrasting to his Ugly Betty role. He is in a Hallmark television series called Sign, Seal, and Deliver or sign, seal, deliver. And in that one, he plays a very similar character to Harold, who is in this movie. So
I like Harold. I like him a lot. So, Corinne, do yes. you have some fun facts for us?
Why, yes, indeed, I do.
Better make sure they're fun. They better be fun.
They're so much fun. You won't even know how fun they are.
You're going to die laughing. It's okay.
Till your socks have been knocked off with the fun of it all. Fun. So these fun facts are all about Harold.
Aww.
I have a special place in my heart for the name Harold.
Mm.
My grandpa was named Harold, and he was like this amazing man of quiet, deep love who wasn't very outwardly enthusiastic or demonstrative, but back in the day, you could copy hundreds of lines of code to make video games. And he made video games for me and my sister to play.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
On our Commodore 64.
Oh, wow.
I know. He did a lot of really nice things. And he was just a really solid, good guy. When I was very young, for one grandfather, I called him DeFodder. And for the other grandfather, who is Harold, I called him Hewod. So even back in the day, I relished the name Harold. And I thought to myself, because the guy in this movie is very like, you know, reserved and quiet, but he has this still waters run deep thing like my grandpa did. And so I'm like, dude, this name Harold, it's a good, solid name. It's warm fuzzies. It's like, And I look up what the fucking name means. It means army ruler. Uh-huh. Or military power. So, I don't understand it. I haven't met a Harold that has kind of fallen under those names.
Maybe your grandpa Harold was assaulting your heart with love.
In a very still waters run deep kind of way.
Because it's recon. It's secret. You're not supposed to know it.
Shh. Secrets. I will assault your heart with love. Very quietly. You won't even
know
what's
happening.
You won't
even know I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Because I'm stealth.
Exactly. So my
totally.
Second amazing, mind-blowing Harold fun fact. This is my final fun fact. The guy in the movie who plays flashback Harold of the awkward teenage years, who does a great job.
Mm-hmm.
He is played by Rowan Kahn. He was DJ Joey in It Was Always You. When they go to the DJ in the garage and the mom is like,
"You're doing anything you want." Yeah. Oh my God. Thank you for jogging my memory. I'm like, DJ Joey? For some reason, my head went instantly Full House. Like,
oh yeah, yeah. I can understand
like
that.
Like Uncle Joey.
No, I was talking about like a very early mm-hmm. movie, a movie that we did very early on in our podcast.
Yes. And I enjoy DJ Joey a lot.
I know. DJ Joey is kind of epic.
He spun sick beats in his garage, even while his mama was yelling at him.
And when he left, he turned on the fucking disco ball so they
sure
could slow dance with each other.
I feel some sweet loving coming. I gotta set the mood.
Mm-hmm.
Blink. Oh, that's amazing. I love that fun. I love those, both of those fun facts. Amazing.
So DJ Joey. So exciting.
DJ Joey and Military Harold.
Yeah. When I was like, oh, he was in it. It Was Always You. Okay. Wait a minute. Oh my God. He was DJ Joey. It's like Marvelous Jim, you know.
It wasn't like Florist 2 or something ridiculously random like that.
No, no, no. So.
That's amazing.
Are you ready to lead us off on the journey that is How to Fall in Love.
I sure am. You're going to be damn near hitched by the time I get through these notes here, because I made the notes so good on How to Fall in Love, and you're going to have word-for-word guidance on how to get there.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Love is at the end, and I'm going to give you the direction.
Everywhere you look around, love is in the air. Do, 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 do. Yes.
Corinne is doing a... How would you describe that dance, Corinne? An octopus crab walk. Arms
almost like
up, raise your hands in the air.
Put
like
your
you
hands
don't
in
care.
Your just don't care. Hey, oh.
It's 20 years ago, and a young, bespectacled, nervous-looking young man named Harold pulls up to a house in a car driven by his mother. He checks his teeth, straightens his suit, and studies a corsage that he has in his hand. His mom tells him how handsome he looks, and he says, "Okay, thanks, but you're going to let me walk up to the door all by myself, right?" She agrees as long as she gets at least one photo of this momentous occasion. "Aw, come on, Mom." But he relents because he probably also wants a memento of this potentially epic night. His first date!
Woo-hoo.
He walks up to the door, and a very cute, much more casually dressed girl opens it. She greets him, and he hands her the corsage. She thanks him, a little confused by the gesture, and then notices Harold's suit. And teases, "Are you trying to make me look bad?" She chuckles while his face falls, not getting the joke, and she reassures him, hey, I'm just kidding. Things are tense for a split second before he asks, "Are you ready to go?" And she says, "Yeah, we're going to meet everybody outside the cafeteria."
Oh.
Harold gulps hard and asks, "Everyone?" "Yeah," she says, "I thought it would be fun if we go with like a big group of people, don't you?"
Mm-hmm.
He does not. He thought this was a date between the two of them, and now he is firmly placed in the friend zone. They walk back to his mom's car, and she makes him stand uncomfortably close together for a photo. Harold is crushed, but Mom encourages him cheerily. "Harold, smile!" And all he can do is grimace. That's me taking a picture.
That was great. I totally picked up on that. And I was like, I feel like I'm there.
Nobody's phone in this day and age makes that noise when you take a picture. But this was an old-timey camera.
Ooh.
20 years into the future, adult Harold is at his accounting firm helping Claire, her husband, and their daughter work on their small business taxes. Harold says, "Accounting, accounting, accounting." And while he looks down at his desk to crunch numbers, Claire notices the beautiful photographies adorning his walls. "Are these all from the same artist?" she asks, and he nods shyly. "Yeah, and actually the artist is me."
Aww.
The whole room seems surprised, except for Harold. He does not seem like the artsy type. They finish their business, and Harold walks them to the door. Claire gets a brilliant idea and asks if he would like to come to their daughter Megan's birthday party on Saturday. She's turning 6, and there's nothing that you want more at your daughter's party than a middle-aged man with no kids. We don't see eye to eye on this. I told Corinne this some time ago, and she was like, "What's wrong with that?" And I was like, "I can understand if he was a good friend, but it's their accountant," which seems like a weird invite. Corinne, thoughts?
They went to school together, so they're old. You know, old classmates. Also, I, as a pet sitter, have been invited to various functions, as well as a receptionist, have also been invited to different people's, like, kind of intimate family things as well. So that's just par for the course for me.
Okay. Maybe it's just me and my aversion to kid activities. Do you want to come to Megan's 6-year-old birthday party? Absolutely not. Thanks for asking. And Claire adds, "And my sister Annie's going to be there. You guys went to school, right?" The memory of 20 years ago smacks Harold in the face. It looks like his face wants to crawl inside of itself. But he regains his composure and agrees to go, if not for the cake, then to be reunited with his unrequited high school crush.
Wah. Later that day, Harold and his bestie Willie, who is wearing something on his head. What? Tamara's shaking her head. Mm-mm. What are your feelings about Willie's accoutrement?
Willie's earpiece that he has permanently attached to his ear in almost every single scene that Willie is in.
Yes.
is a little bit much, and it's bright red, and it's big, and I redubbed it Little Willy or Big Red. That's how I'm going to address his earpiece here on throughout.
Lil Willy is a little too close to a penis reference, and this is Hallmark after all.
I know. I liked it. It's a little innuendo. Lil Willy.
I'd like to hope for more for Willy than a little one. But, so.
Oh, yes.
We'll go for Big Red. I mean, this week, Will. You can do whatever you want. While Harold orders, Willie finishes up a call with his wife on the super glamorous Bluetooth headset that he has in one ear, a.k.a. Lil Willie or Big Red. Courtesy, Miss Tamara. Suddenly, things go slow-mo. Lady in gray is getting coffee. Starts to play, and Harold catches her eyes as a woman in a brown-haired woman in a gray pantsuit walks through the door.
I love your impromptu song stylings; they're so good. Oh damn, I need a tissue now.
She smiles, and he swiftly turns away. She's here, he whispers to Willie. Go talk to her, Willie says. But Harold refuses. Every time I ask a woman out or go get set up with someone, it just ends in disaster. Willie uses this as his entry point. He casually, not casually, says, maybe you could use a dating coach. Harold is dubious. What are you talking about? Willie continues. It's like a private teacher that teaches you how to date.
That sounds amazing.
Me and my wife saw this on a news program the other day. Willie hands him a flyer and Harry looks at it. This is just embarrassing. No way. Just then, Lady in Gray with her coffee passes by and Willie raises his eyebrows pointedly at Harold. The next thing we know, we are looking at a gold-framed photo of Cupid, but instead of a cute baby head, it's got a blonde woman's face photoshopped on top of it.
I was wondering if you were going to notice that, because I didn't the first time, and then I saw it the second time, and I was like, what in the actual fuck?
Same! I was like, wait, what's going on with that? Because I'd always kind of noticed that it was her face, and I was just, I hadn't noticed anything else that was really going on in the picture. And then I happened to pause it, and I saw the whole Cupid thing going on, and I was like, oh no, oh no.
A grown-ass woman's face on a chunky baby body with wings. That's not weird at all.
Not at all. Why couldn't she have been like Aphrodite? That would have been too classy.
Did you see her office? Pepto-Bismol pink, puked all over it. She is nothing but classy, that woman. Mm.
Basically, Tamara's a little bitter that I got this portion, but feel free to jump in with any extra accoutrement that you need to add that you feel like I'm leaving off.
Okay.
The office.
Got it.
Welcome. The office is pink, has lace curtains and flowers everywhere. It's a lot. And did you notice she's pretending to water flowers that are like fake flowers? She has this giant watering can that she's like, it's like, what are you doing?
I didn't know if that was her just being crazy pants or if that was Hallmark stylings, like in its, finest form.
You're totally right. It completely could be Hallmark stylings in its finest form. However, her office and everything was so over the top that I am inclined to think that it was actually her in her finest form.
Yes, I do believe I refer to that office as man repellent.
Mm-hmm. The office is a lot. Meredith, the enthusiastic dating coach, hands him a glossy trifold flyer, opening it up to reveal a full glossy, full color photo of a sunset with print on top of it. The graphic designer in you was saying, wow, I wish I could do work like that.
She was not.
You're like flashing back on some of your worst work graphic design moments where your boss man's like, here's this picture. Now I want you to put a bunch of print on top of it.
Mm-hmm. And I heard my boss's words echo throughout my office because his favorite saying was, that looks fun. That was like every time we see something like, that looks fun. Like, no, it doesn't.
When Harold opens the trifold flyer, he says, that looks fun.
I hate you so much.
As he gazes at the full color picture of the sunset with print on top of it. Meredith says, I recommend the Platinum Package. It's our most intensive, and I will teach you not only the ins and out of dating, but how to hold on to that lady that you love. Harold looks at the price of the Platinum Package and quickly shuts that shit down, timidly saying, I think I should take some time to think this over. Back away, back away, back away, back away.
That Saturday, it's Megan's birthday party extravaganza. There are pink balloons and streamers and screaming six-year-olds everywhere. And there in the kitchen amongst it all is Annie. She's a vision and Harold has a flashback. Back. Oh, dear God, not again. No more flashbacks of their undate and how beautiful she was to him back then and how she's still pretty damn hot now. Claire introduces, or rather reminds Annie that she knows Harold, and she shoots her sister a quick, sour, what the fuck look before painting on a brave face and saying, of course, Harold, how are you? They have some awkward small talk and awkward silence, and then she asks, can I get you a drink or something? And he says, yep. Hit me up with a double scotch on the rocks to deal with all this bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, he doesn't. He probably gets a total McSafe and an alcoholic beverage since it is a six-year-old birthday party.
They haven't been to my cousin's children's book birthday parties.
Oh, yeah. I know that's true for a lot of my family as well. They're bringing in kegs.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. You got your menu of kegs, weed, and wine. And mixers. Yeah. You got to have your mixers.
Sometimes if they're really like going all out, they'll get a margarita machine. A margarita slushy machine.
Ooh. Huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's always fun.
Man, mm-hmm. I've been missing out.
And next we see Annie and Harold walking through the house while Annie regales him with all of her adventure that she's had since high school, including the fact that she's an aspiring party planner. Did you do all of this? Harold asks, referring to the six-year-old's party decorations, and Annie nods proudly. Yes, it's amazing what you can do with some balloons and construction paper. And I hate to say that the decorations are just balloons and construction paper, exactly like she said. It wasn't even anything fancy.
Well, if you really need good party planning services, then ODK Party Planning Services are here to meet your every need.
Oh, my God. Star, ODK Party Planning, here to hear about your party planning needs. You beat me to the punch. Oh, get out of my head, you.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry. No. That's all you.
Nope, it's too late. We're synced. Just okay. Like our periods every month, we're synced.
Get out of my head and get out of my pants.
But seriously, did you notice the decorations? I need to talk about it for a moment. The decorations, Corinne, how did you feel about them?
So I have less strong feelings than you do because you've seen all of the decor that my family puts together for birthday parties, which is...
There's decor.
Pies. I think that's pretty much the decor is bringing out a couple of pies.
Right.
And so...
They're beautiful, though.
Yes. But there were actually streamers wrapped around a banister. There was some kind of a sign. So I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty good. But Tamara, you have a way better decorating vision, which is why you're in charge of the decorating vision for ODK Party Planners.
Right. Yes. And thank you for pointing that out, that I am the creative force behind ODK Party Planning. But...
Wait, what are we saying? You're the
I'm saying you're the sole creative force. You You've just established that I have all the creativity around the decorations. You bring the pies, apparently, is what you're saying. That's not what you said?
Like you are putting words in my mouth. We are a creative force together. You are in charge of the party planning design.
This is not a good ad for our ODK party planning service. The girls can't even get it together to decide who does what. They'll just sit there arguing and bickering in the middle of the venue.
It's okay. We have a great way of resolving these matters. All we do is we have a stiff rock, paper, scissors competition. It's what, best 15 out of 7? 30? 15 out of 30?
Sure, yeah. We always lose count and start all over again and then get nothing done. So it's an ongoing process.
But at least we have some fun. 1, 2, 3, go!
I am not super well-versed in party decorations, but when she said balloons and construction paper, it panned to the wall and literally had shapes cut out of construction paper that kind of made a sort of sign that looked like it was done by six-year-olds. And then I'm like, oh, maybe that was a crafting project that all the kids did together. Then it panned over to the happy birthday or whatever sign that was next to it that also looked like it was done by six-year-olds. So I was like, oh, oh no, that was her. And the decorations were fine. I don't want to pick them apart and be bitchy about it, which I am already well knee-deep into. But she's trying to be a party planner. And like party planners of today, which I've dealt with quite a few of, haven't been to the parties, but dealt with a party planning piece, are like balloon wreaths and archways and huge paper flowers, which are actually surprisingly easy to make, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that. Like her stuff looked like the mom put it together an hour and a half before the party started, which to me does not say party planner, which is maybe why she's having a hard time finding work. Just saying. I will get off my high decorating horse and continue. She's having a hard time breaking into the party planning business, and Harold fills her in with everything he's been doing, which is summed up in two sentences. I'm an accountant and I like photography. But then he gets bold. He straightens his glasses and tells her, "The moment I saw you in the kitchen, it reminded me of the day we went to the homecoming dance our freshman year. Remember?" She has a blank look on her face and doesn't seem to recall. For homecoming, he adds, "My mom drove us." Still not jostling her memory.
I'm sorry. If I had been her Miss Popular Girl and somehow I had said yes to a date with Harold, Mr. Nerdy Awkward Boy, and his mom came to pick us up, and I had created a whole thing around having friends out front so I didn't have to be alone with him, that would have been one of those memories that stuck forever in my head.
It really looks like she doesn't remember, but then she holds her hand, or she throws her hands up enthusiastically and says, "Of course I remember the dance. We had fun, didn't we?" And then Harold knows for sure that she totally does not remember him, because they did not have fun at all. Later that night, after six-year-old Megan's tucked into bed, Claire is cleaning up the party aftermath, and her sister Annie joins her in the living room. Claire thanks her and says, "The party looked great. Everybody said so. Except for Tamara." Annie follows her big sis into the kitchen and tells her, "Well, I talked to your friend Harold like you asked me to." "He's a nice guy, right?" Claire asks, and Annie shrugs noncommittally. "He's kind of bland, if you ask me. By the way, I need to ask you a huge favor. I know I said I'd be ready to move out by next week, but finding a job and a place in the city is so expensive." Her sister's face hardens. She had an inkling that this conversation was coming. "You've been here 4 months already," Claire complains. And Annie smiles brightly. "Because time flies when you're having fun, right?" "I've tried looking everywhere for an event planning job, but there's just not a lot out there." "Then get a day job," her sister says, exasperated. "You're not a kid anymore. You need to have a backup plan until this party planning thing takes off." But you can tell by the look on her sister's face that Claire does not believe it will. And she needs her sister to come to terms with that. Corinne, how do you feel about having a relative staying with you for an elongated period of time without contributing anything?
Without contributing anything? That would be problematic for me.
I was like, okay with the sister thing, but when she was like, you're not paying anything, you're not helping out any kind of way, like, of course I don't want you staying here longer, and you're not even like attempting anything.
I felt like she was helping out a little bit, but she wasn't really putting forth a lot of effort.
Yeah. I don't know if it was yours or mine, where she was like, is this about the dirty dishes? No. Is this about me not cleaning up my room? No. Is this about me borrowing your dress without asking? No. Okay, that's all I got. What do you got? And I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm just like, Annie, come on now.
Yeah.
Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie? Annie, are you okay?
She's not okay.
You just seem like a smooth criminal.
Annie needs a J-O-B.
Yes.
Because she's not a smooth criminal. A few nights later, Harold goes to a restaurant for dinner, or rather, I should say, his restaurant, as it is apparent that he is a regular. The hostess, who is played by motherfucking Kathy Najimy, greets him warmly and steers him towards the better of the two daily specials. Harold peruses the menu when he's greeted by his server with a warm, "You've got to be kidding me." Harold looks up, and it's Annie. He says in disbelief, "You work here?" She starts talking at him. "Yeah, well, you know, today is my first day and it has not been going well." She moves over to another table and busses a couple of plates from a couple sitting there and continues talking to Harold. "Can you believe it? My car broke down on my way over here and now I get off in an hour?" She moves over to another table and fusses some things around as she talks across the restaurant to him. "And I have no way of getting home, and I don't know if you know this, but being a server is really hard." Things could literally not get any worse. "Wait a minute. I'm not going to say that. That's bad karma." Harold timidly says, "You know, if you need a ride, I can give you one." Annie pauses and looks at him. "That's so sweet, but I couldn't ask you to do that." Harold says softly, "Oh, okay." Annie continues with puppy dog eyes. "Could I?" The long and short. Harold drives Annie home, and when he opens the door for her, she says, "Someone's girlfriend trained you well." Harold looks down. I don't have a girlfriend, and I'm so bad at dating, I even considered seeing a specialist, a dating coach." Annie asks, "How did that go?" Harold looks at her and says candidly, "It was a disaster. She made me feel like a lost cause, and I think she just wanted my money."
Sincerely. And she superimposed her Photoshop face onto babies' bodies. It was really creepy.
"Look, I don't want to ruin the surprise for your birthday, but I superimposed our faces onto a couple of babies from the Ann Gettys collection that are in pots."
"As long as I'm the sunflower, I'm okay with it."
Annie says sincerely, "No one is a lost cause." She thanks him for the ride and they part ways. When Annie enters the house, her sister is waiting for her in the living room. Claire says, "How'd you get home?" Annie offhandedly says, "Harold, and I thought I had problems. If I were into bubble baths, this would be when I would take one." She starts heading up the stairs when Claire stops her. "Do you have a minute?" Annie automatically switches to the defensive. "Okay, but I swear I'm going to pay Steve back for fixing my car." Claire asks her to sit down and explains that she feels like she's helping Annie escape reality by staying there, but she doesn't want to enable this behavior anymore. So Annie needs to find her own motherfucking place. The next day at work, Annie gives Kim an earful about all her woes and problems. Woes and problems. I think those are the same things.
Problems and woes. Woes and problems.
Oh, so many woes. So many problems.
So many po-wabrums.
"I've got 99 woes, but a problem ain't one. Hey-yo." Sorry, that was really bad. Okay. Kim is supportive and suggests that if Annie is looking for another job, that she looks towards the people she knows to see if they can find another opportunity for her. Annie is dubious as she's not in touch with much of anyone anymore until her brain hamster screeches to a halt on the wheel, doing a loop-de-loop and rocking back and forth. "Harold, he needed a dating coach and she could be the answer he's looking for. So after work, she goes to the library and spends the day reading dating books. She's going to try and do the thing.
You know, I've been wanting to help people solve their problems, too. I think I'm going to be a freelance therapist.
Okay.
I think I have it in me because I have problems and I like listening to people's problems.
Should I give you therapizing for dummies?
Yes. And I would charge much less than actually accredited, you know, therapists.
Why?
So that'd be perfect.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I've seen people kind of in the industry that act as matchmakers. And I'm just like, how the hell did you get that job? And I don't think I could do it. I would not be well. Nope. I can't even find myself a match, let alone somebody else.
I've got a plan for you, Tam. Don't worry. It all involves speed dating. It's going to be amazing.
Nope.
I can't believe you're so resistant to this idea. I'm not asking you to get on an app. I'm just saying, you know, we sit in front of all these different people and have weird conversations. What more kind of entertainment? Afterwards, we get drinks and we laugh. It's all good.
You're totally not selling it well. Like awkward conversations. You got to say heartfelt connections. You can have a heartfelt connection with somebody in just a few minutes instead of months and months of texting and chatting back and forth. Mm. Doesn't that sound good?
Yeah, doesn't that sound good? Mm.
Maybe I could be a dating coach. Oh, I really sold that. Hey.
I'm glad that you talked yourself into speed dating, and I can't wait for our first speed dating experience with each other.
If you are serious about it, are you serious about it?
Oh, yeah. Oh. I think it would be hella fun. I think it would be ridiculous, and I think it would be hella fun.
Okay.
I had a friend who ended up going to a sensual speed dating experience, and I don't know. It was kind of place that gives yoga hugs, you know. Gentle listeners, for those of you who do not know, yoga hugs are when somebody hugs you and like the top part of their body is touching you, but then they move in and their hips are also flush with the rest of your body. Yoga hug.
What? I don't even like relatives and friends touching me. That is not cool.
I had a yoga hug and I was like, ah, and then I did not know that was what it was called. And then my coworker was like, oh yeah, that's a yoga hug. She was like, my neighbor's girlfriend gives those.
Oh, hell no.
I mean, we've hugged before, but I've never like smushed my hips up to yours.
Wouldn't that be weird if I'm like, you're not doing it right? This is like thrust.
Sometimes I would tease my sister and I'd go, yoga hug, when we're like in the middle of a hug, and she would like, boom, jump back.
I don't blame you, Bridget. I don't blame you. With all her love self-help info fresh in her head, Annie heads over to Harold's house to pitch him her great idea. She reminds him of the conversation or how he told her he needed a dating coach. Harold cringes slightly. Yeah, I kinda wish I didn't tell you that. No, she assures him. It's perfect because I can coach you on how to date. I've dated tons of guys. I have loads of experience. I can help you. Harold asks the obvious question. Have you helped anyone like this before? And Annie has to admit, no. But I did research, and I'm way cheaper than the other dating coach you looked at. She places a crumpled piece of paper in front of him. These are my prices. He picks it up gingerly and gives it a once over. How many sessions will this include? Oh, I was thinking 8. Yes, 8. Harold doesn't seem to be buying it, and Annie begins to lose her confidence. Am I asking for too much? She says quietly. No, he tells her. It's not about the money. And this emboldens her once more. And she changes her tactics and claps her hands together and says, you're right. It's not about the money. It's about all the great dates I'm going to get you. We're going to have so much fun. Harold still is unconvinced, so Annie resorts to pleading. Please let me do this. I think we'll make a great team. Her sad puppy dog face finally breaks him and he says, okay, quietly, causing her to jump up in the air and squeal with delight. Great! We'll start Tuesday. I don't work the late shift. She sticks out her hand and holds it there until he shakes it. It's a deal. The first lesson of love is titled Self-Confidence.
Ooh.
That Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. sharp, Annie shows up at Harold's door. He opens it and she says enthusiastically, "Are you ready for the next chapter of your life?" He nods and mumbles, yeah, I guess so. And she clasps the notebook in front of her chest and shakes her head. I was really hoping for more excitement, but we'll work on that. They go inside his house and she marvels. What a great place. Some Sinatra's playing on a record player and she nods. Great music. She shelves by the seashore. I knew I was going to have a hard time saying, like, God damn it. She sees shelves full of records and goes over and thumbs through all the old crooners. They have the same taste in music. This is a sign, she says, looking at him. You love romantic music. Now we just need to infuse that romance into you. Let's get started. She makes him stand in front of her and says, the secret to dating is that it always starts way before you ever start talking to the girl. Harold cocks his head to the side. He never knew that, and it kind of makes sense. So she continues, I need you to ooze confidence. Right now I'm not feeling that from you. I want you to be my lump of clay, but less of a lump. She guides him in front of a mirror and asks him to list all of his finest qualities. He stands there at a loss. Okay, she offers one of your finest qualities, and he's still speechless. Come on, she coaxes. What do you see when you look in the mirror? When he sees the shy, bespectacled kid that couldn't get a date and stayed home every night doing his homework.
Aww.
Annie's surprised that he's still living so far in the past, and Harold admits that he doesn't think he changed all that much. He starts second-guessing the whole process and begins telling her that maybe this coaching thing is a bad idea, but she stops him. The secret of attractiveness is positive attitude. She points him back to the mirror and directs him. I want you to say, I look good. Harold's reluctant. I feel silly saying that, he admits. Who's here to see it? She cries out. It's just me and you. Come on, let me hear you say it. I look good, he mumbles quietly. Again, she cries. I look good. He says more emphatically, and then finally, a little sassily, I look good. He smirks after this last one, and Annie tells him that he's not that shy little boy anymore, and nobody sees him like that. Now we just gotta work on you not seeing that anymore. He looks at her intently and says, how do we do that? She smiles. By putting your best foot forward. But we're gonna need more than 8 sessions. She picks up her notebooks and starts jotting some things down, and Harold asks dryly, and how much more is this going to cost me? She smirks, puts her pen down, slams the book shut, and says, you know what? I'm invested in this cause. Let's just call it a little bit of extra credit. And they are in this together now.
Yay!
Harold! Harold!
Harold! Harold! Harold! And now we launch into the mother of all montages. First, Harold is working out with Annie. She's having him run stairs while she shouts at him, what feature do you like most about yourself? He continues to jog. I don't know. She shouts, come on, Harold. Your smile, all those years of braces, has totally paid off. Your smile is fantastic. He stops and looks at her puzzled. Really? Really? She still has work to do. So we montage more.
Can we just talk about how he was sitting in front of that pole, working that little string back and forth? What was that supposed to be? Pilates? Poor man's Pilates?
No, it's an exercise band. But it was ridiculous the way he was using it. Yeah.
He was like flossing the telephone pole. It was bizarre.
It was hot. It was like he's saying, oh, my arms are sexy. Look at them move.
Oh. Okay.
There's a whole montage where they're like, we're doing sit-ups and, you know, all this stuff. And one of those pieces where Harold has a bungee-type cord workout band that he has around a pole. And he's moving his arms back and forth, almost skiing style. He was doing in-place Nordic walking.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Thanks, Queer Eye Germany. She still has work to do, so we montage more. He gets a haircut, which looks like the same hair he had before. Did you notice it?
It was styled differently, but it looked pretty much the same.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
they use product.
Thanks for clarifying that. And they get rid of his glasses. Womp, womp. I'm like, couldn't they have just gotten him a cuter pair of glasses? But whatever.
I didn't think his glasses were that bad.
I didn't think they were either, but they were very reminiscent of his high school glasses. And so it was kind of like this parallel of him holding on to his younger self by having glasses from basically from the past. And so like him having a newer, kickier pair of glasses would have been a really nice defining moment.
Good thing we don't have that problem, because we would be reminiscent of an 80s secretary if we still had the same glasses we did in school.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're big. They're heavy. They're thick.
So he gets contacts. And then she comes in with a pile of clothes, but they're boring conservative clothes, so they look a lot like what he already has, and they do a try-it-on montage that we've been asking for movie after movie, but it has finally happened, which is a yay, but then it's with lackluster results because the clothes he's wearing are like...
Yeah. And in what world do you bring a crap ton of clothes to a house unless you're like a bazillionaire that doesn't want to be out in public? You go to the store where you have more options, and then you don't have to take the shit back afterwards, because most of that stuff was hideous and you know he's not going to keep it.
I think he might, because I think his sense of personal style is, you know, not very personal.
Personal style be damned. I don't think he's going to keep the bedazzled jeans.
Wait, there were bedazzled jeans?
Gemstones. I swear to God, I thought I saw some gemstones on some pockets.
Oh,
I swear to God.
Maybe I was a little too hasty to dismiss the fashion montage.
Was Eddie Hardy popular 10 years ago?
It's coming back. It's all coming back. However, this makeover has given Harold a much-needed boost. So when she asks him to look at himself in the mirror in his new threads and say, "I look good," this time he says it with conviction and a slight smile. We montage a bit more, and they're jogging. Annie asks him to name 5 things that he likes about himself. And bam! Loyal, considerate, hard worker, enjoy fitness, and got a nice smile! Triumph! Woo! And now it's lesson 2, breaking the ice. Harold and Annie are at the club. Annie has generously bought them both
yes, the club.
There are like strobe lights going on. I was like, wow, there's some things happening in that club. Annie has generously bought them both cranberry martinis.
Oh my God. I was like, what the fuck? Holy Sex in the City, Batman. What kind of drink is that? A cranberry martini?
I don't know.
You
have more experience
to each their own, but
than
yeah,
I do.
I kind of want to say that is generally a drink that females tend to order, but I'm not sure.
I
don't drink cranberry martinis, but when I do, it's usually with a bevy of college-aged girls that are about to go wild.
Look, we here at One Dry Kiss do not pigeonhole beverages into sexist, narrow holes. However, I will say that it is definitely like a younger person's drink, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. I agree.
Okay.
Harold looks at the drink like it's going to bite him, so I think he is very much on the same page as you. Annie is ready to launch that baby bird Harold out of that nest. She wants him to work on connecting with the ladies and gives him the pointers. 1, no cheesy pickup lines. 2, be yourself. Harold is intensely uncomfortable with this, and she tells him that the only way to get better is to practice, and pushes him towards a blonde standing at the bar with the tried and true line of, "Hi, I'm Harold. I just wanted to come over and introduce myself. What's your name?" He does this. She looks receptive. It's all going very well until she's waiting for him to continue the conversation, and he just stares awkwardly into the middle distance and then leaves. He returns to Annie, who swiftly realizes that he needs more than just an entry point to get going. What was that? I didn't think I had to tell you, but after the introduction, you make conversation. You look great tonight. What do you think about this sick beat? And then, after that, you ask her out. There are three rules for landing a date. Number one, introduction. Number two, conversation. Number three, ask them out. They end the evening with her saying that he's going to need some more extra credit. Bow-chicka-bow-bow. Hey. Welcome to the extra credit at Harold's house. Annie slips into something a little bit more comfortable. No, just kidding.
The camera just got really close to the phone screen. I don't remember that part.
And Tamara went from like sitting back in her chair being like, uh-huh, to like, wait, what? Perked up a little bit there, I see.
Did I bypass through a commercial again and accidentally skip to the next part, which I sometimes do?
No. Annie does not slip into something more comfortable. Nothing sexy happens at Harold's house, at least at this moment in time. Annie tells him the conversations should be genuine. He needs to talk and listen and say things that are real. All very good tips. He stands up and looks Annie in the eyes. His gaze softens and he gets a hint of a smile on his face. You have beautiful eyes, he says huskily, and walks off, leaving Annie reeling and practically fanning herself. Oh, good. That felt real, she says to him as he leaves the room. Whew. Way to leave him wanting more, Harold. Way to go.
The next morning at her sister's house, Annie beelines it through the kitchen, grabs an apple, and tells her sis, I'll be in late tonight. Oh, Claire says, I thought you worked the morning shift. But Annie corrects her, that's my first job. I'll be working late at my second job. Her sister looks at her inquisitively, and Annie shrugs. Long story. You can tell that Claire wants more info, but Annie's probably a little bit bitter, and this is a small bit of payback. Mm-hmm. You don't get to know what's going on in my life, sis. That's what I think she should have said, but she did not. That's what I said in my head loudly for her.
You don't know me. You don't know me.
You don't get to know what's going on with me if you're going to kick me out.
Okay.
This causes her sis to do a little emotional jabbing of her own. She calls after her, do you need help finding a new place to live? Annie hurries out, calling over her shoulder, no thanks, I got it covered. And once she's gone, Claire's husband, Steve, who's been sitting at the sink watching this whole thing unfold, asks, what's the deal? Why are you so eager to have her move out? Claire gives him a look. She can't keep getting a free ride. Her husband shrugs, confused. Yeah, but you help me at the shop all the time. Are you sure this isn't you getting back at her? Claire's eyes pierce through him. Absolutely not, she says. Okay, he says, backing up. I just was making sure that this wasn't payback for her being the baby in the family and you always having to be the big responsible sister. It's not, she says, still defiant, but her eyes are telling lies.
You don't know There's me. Something else you don't under know the- me.
There's something else under the surface that's percolating and it's rearing its head in ugly ways.
Ooh.
Look inside yourself, Claire. Look inside yourself.
Maybe she needs to look at the woman in the mirror.
Oh, we have not had a woman in the mirror moment in a really long time. Yes, I think she does. Absolutely.
Well, we are going to be having one coming up. I will tell you Ooh. That. I know.
Later on that day, Harold goes to his favorite coffee shop to meet his friend Willie and Little Willie. But Harold doesn't come alone. He's brought Annie, his impromptu dating coach. Willie stands to shake her hand, introduces her to Little Willie, and congratulates her on doing such a good job with his bestie.
Introduces her to Little Willie. And this is my beloved earpiece, Little Willie. Just
wife.
Whisper into it. It might get even bigger if you do.
Oh, or redder. Oh,
ew!
You know, like dogs when they get excited.
That's exactly what I know.
Willie congratulates her on doing such a good job with his bestie, but Annie's not just there to exchange pleasantries. She hunkers down in her seat and says, "So, when do we expect our target to arrive?"
Dun, 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 dun.
She does a short while later. Gray. It's the attractive Bruce. Thank you, Corinne. I was waiting for that.
It's getting coffee.
The attractive brunette that always smiles at Harold comes in. He's going to talk to her. Or is he? He's having a mini panic attack in his chair, and Annie assures him, "You got this. Just remember what I said and go be yourself."
Yeah.
He walks to the counter and says, "Hello." And there's a few awkward beats until he introduces himself in a little too loud voice. "I'm Harold." And he finds out that the attractive brunette is named Julie Owens, and they have a pretty lovely conversation.
Aww.
Harold is surprisingly charming. They bond over coffee and their stylistic choices in clothes. And after some chit-chat, Julie beats him to the punch. "So, do you want to get together sometime?" she asks him. And he stammers out, yes. She hands him her card and says, "Let's get together soon," and leaves with a smile.
Aww.
He's walking on clouds as he floats back to the table. Annie and Willie are waiting, giddy with anticipation, and he shows them the card with her number. They are thrilled. And oddly enough, Annie and Willie high-five each other, and nobody high-fives Harold. What the fuck? Willie gushes that he's got to tell his wife. She's never going to believe that Harold went from sitting on the bench to being a star quarterback. And Harold plops down hard in his seat and says, "That makes two of us."
Lesson 3, the art of conversation, is held at Harold's house, along with a couple of glasses of wine. I gotta say, this movie is full of solid advice. Annie says that he should arrange to meet with Julie for drinks, because it's a short time commitment that can always be lengthened if they both want to spend more time with each other. If things go sideways, it's an easy out. And Annie explains that the art of conversation is listening and asking questions that show you are listening to the other person. In the world of relationships, it's golden. Annie and Harold clink glasses, and with that, we're transported to the next scene where Annie is using Kim, a.k.a. Kathy Najimy, as a fake date for Harold. Kim is perfect because she is super frank, letting him know when she feels like she's a suspect in a murder or at a job interview. Finally, Harold gets conversationally on course, and we find out that Kim loves collecting animal teeth, raising iguanas, and making art out of pie filling, amongst many other interesting hobbies. She is a champion jouster, FYI.
Oh my God. We need to explore that character more.
For real. I make the comment later that I would rather be out on a date with her than with Julie. But yes.
Did you notice her little character quirk? Kathy Najimy, or a.k.a. Kim, throughout the movie when she was waitressing about, she would always have a flower in her hair, and she would take the flower out and she'd put it in a vase on the table. She did that like 5 or 6 times.
No, I did not notice that. I saw her like take the flower out and put it down before she left at the end of the day, but I didn't know. That is brilliant. Good going, Eagle Eyes Tamara.
Because she was always like, she had a flower in her hair constantly. Yeah. Then she'd always take it out. And I was like, where's that flower going? And then I'm like, oh my God, it's going in a vase. And another vase. And another vase. She's fucking brilliant.
Oh, she was fantastic. Like at one point she's leaving. Oh, and she's saying, Harold and Annie kissing in a tree. And she's doing a little butt wiggle as she walks away. And I'm like, she's gold.
Mm-hmm.
She had this small, pretty much nothing part, but she did it so well, you know, and she added her own flavor to it. Whenever she was around, it was like a sparkling moment in the movie.
And she infused all kinds of little character special moments, like the flowers and the vase from her hair.
And where in a Hallmark movie do you hear about somebody collecting animal teeth?
Or raising iguanas.
Well, making art out of pie filling could be a thing, but...
Totally. Yeah. That's like the next Food Network show. If somebody gets a hold of it, that's pie up.
That's pie up. Oh. Yeah. Next we see Harold and Julie on their first date. Harold is doing well conversationally. Oh, there I go. But I'd rather be chatting up Kim than Julie, personally, as she just seems more interesting, quite frankly. Harold finds out that she's in real estate and loves horror movies. She suggests they go to see one together. Harold doesn't seem all that thrilled, but can't bring himself to pivot the date. So, yay for a next date at a horror movie? Question mark, question mark.
I mean, it's a good opportunity to get scared and, like, jump into your date's arms, maybe? Maybe.
I thought that she was going to say that when she was like, yeah, but, you know, it's really good because... And then she goes, rah! And I was like, I thought she was going to say, I kind of, like... kind of love to you. But no, she instead made a scary, like, monster face and noise. And he was like, ha!
Yeah. Nothing says hot like, rah! The next day after Harold's date, he and Annie are walking in the park on an overcast day with tall cups of coffee in their hand. He shares that he already has a second date with Julie and that she's pretty chatty and it wasn't hard to get her to open up after all. On their next date, they plan on seeing a movie, and Annie is thrilled. Great, now we just got to work on your sharing, because lesson 4 is sharing.
Aww.
Can you say sharing, Corinne?
Sorry.
Close enough. What, like talking about my past? Harold asks. No, Annie says, like talking about things that are really important to you and opening up to her. Harold looks confused, so she clarifies. What moves you? What gets your juices flowing? What do you love? He scratches his head and avoids her eyes while saying, what if she's not into the kinky shit and like yucks my mom? What if I'm not good enough and she thinks I'm dull? Okay, he doesn't say the kinky shit, but, you know, he does think that somebody might find him dull. And Harold, Annie cries, she will not think that. Asterisk, 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 says this girl who called him dull after she met him at her niece's birthday party. Just bringing it back up. Nothing gets past me. I will bring it up again.
She didn't scratch beneath the surface.
Yeah.
I kind of peg Harold as a guy who would be super into shibari, which is where it's like a Japanese rope bondage thing where they do all these really intricate rope tying up patterns on the person for bondage.
You and your yoga hugs and shibari, like, you are teaching me some things on this episode.
It's really cool looking. I don't think that I think that my delicate skin would not work well with it, but it's not a type of barbecue, just FYI.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and there's like a lot of other different kinds of patterns, but I'm showing her a picture where this woman has her hands tied behind her, but it's all like intricately braided up and wrapped around and everything like that. It's really cool looking. So, yeah.
It looks like a fancy French braid behind her back.
Yeah. Shibari.
Shibari. What if she's not into shibari? Harold says. We'll get that bitch into the Boy Scouts and she'll learn the knots. It'll be fine. Actually, Annie says, it won't matter. The right girl will love you for who you are. But I just have one question. She stands in front of him, blocking his way on the path. Harold, who are you? I know you have great taste in music, but what are you passionate about? And then we are transported to Harold's house, and he's showing her all of his photography.
Aww.
She's looking at a photograph on the wall, and she is blown away. So much artistic talent crammed into an accountant's body. Did you take these? She asks, and he casually says, yep, and I printed them. He stands behind her and says, there's something so exciting to me about preserving a perfect memory and hanging on to something beautiful that never fades or goes away.
Aww.
Does that sound corny? And she says, no, that shit is deep and she is feeling it. And admits, Harold, you're becoming more and more interesting by the minute. And what does he do to further garner her adoration? He cooks her a delicious meal. Annie sits at his dining room table and eats with gusto and proclaims, "Harold, this is delicious." He spoons out a portion for himself and says, "Are you sure I was trying to make it healthy?" And Tamara says, "Bitch, if you can cook healthy and make it taste good, bonus, 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 bonus."
I know. Both of us are like, "Harold, we will date you. It's okay. You just, we're ready."
I never thought you were dull, Harold. I never thought you were dull.
For real.
I'm going to tell you everything that Annie said behind your back. She thought you were boring.
But look at me and my new haircut. It looks really good, doesn't it?
And I like Shabani. Wait, what did you
Shabari.
Say?
Shabani.
That's yogurt, isn't it?
Yeah. Shabani.
That's what happens when I try to get kinky. I like yogurt.
Hey there, baby. Shabani. Oh, yeah.
Annie waves at the table and says, "All of this definitely works in your favor. Let's recap, shall we? You like candlelit dinners, romantic music, gorgeous photographs, Casablanca?" He looks towards her and says, "You don't think that all sounds bland?" And Annie gushes, "No! You're an old-fashioned romantic. Women think that there's not men like you around anymore. Or never existed. Existed outside of romance novels." She encourages him to share this side with Julie. Take her somewhere romantic. And Harold agrees. He's going to do it. He's going to do it!
Yeah!
Not like sex do it, but he's going to do that romance stuff that she said. We go to the next night and we see Harold and Julie right as they get out of the movie. She is charged up by the horror and the gruesomeness of it all, while Harold was kind of scared. He said he's going to have nightmares for a week, and Julie agrees. I know, isn't it great?
Oh, and gentle listeners, she said horror, not whore. FYI.
Oh, sorry.
Oh,
Shabani.
No. Chobani. Yeah, no, totally Chobani. I was in a women's studies class and I said the horror, and everybody thought I said the whore, and I was like, of all the places to say that in a women's studies class, is not the place to do it. And people looked at me with shocked faces and I was like, what are you talking about?
Horror. So they go to a dimly lit restaurant and share a piece of chocolate cake. And after their dessert, he drives her home, walks her to the door, and he gets a nice kiss on the cheek. And Julie says, "You're a great guy." But not like he's a friend great guy, but like a great guy, like love interest kind of great. And after they say goodnight, she gives him a knowing look before she closes the door quietly behind her. Success!
Woo-hoo!
He walks down the stairs in disbelief and goes straight to Annie's work. He needs to give her an update on how well the date went. He gets to the restaurant and hurries across the dining room towards her. She's waiting on a couple at a table, but he can't wait to tell her how it went. He pulls her away and shares that she was right. Everything worked. They connected on so many levels, and it all started with listening and asking questions. He's crushing it. And Annie couldn't be happier. He finally stops blabbering, looks her in the eyes. She has two. Looks her in the eyes and says, "Everything's going to be different now, and it's all because of you." He pulls her into an awkward but heartfelt hug. He leaves her so she can get back to work, and she's left standing there feeling elated, but there's a tinge of something underneath. Maybe sadness? She helped Harold find love. Why can't she find it?
Okay, so serious question. During, when he goes in and he's like ebullient about his date and sharing with her, he says, "She even gave me a kiss." And she gave him like the chastest kiss on the cheek. Which
I'm like that.
Yeah, which I'd be like, what are you even doing? And so then I realized, I was like, wait, is he a virgin?
Oh, God. Yes. Yes, he is.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was just like,
he might have paid for some sex at some point in time, I'm going to say. But it was quick and unfulfilling, and he probably felt so ashamed he never did it again. So
I was going to say that
sexual conquest.
I think he would be so nervous that he wouldn't actually be able to have anything fruitful happen.
Okay. He paid for sex, could not perform, and wound up talking to the girl for 45 minutes.
Yes. Yes. I think you got it pegged right there.
That's why that dry kiss was so fulfilling, because that was like his third base.
The next day at the diner, Annie and Kim are talking about her progress with Harold. Annie says, "It's almost like I don't recognize him anymore." And Kim agrees that Annie has been quite successful, and then that she could parlay this into something bigger. Her pictures on bus benches, her own reality show. As Annie fills the salt dispensers, Annie wonders, does he even need me anymore? No, of course he needs me. Kim calls her out. Are you concerned because you're afraid of losing your job? Or because you're afraid of losing Harold? I think
valid question.
You and Kim are on the same page. I think you like him. Annie scoffs. No, it's purely professional. But Kim knows. And we know that Annie has started getting hearts in her eyes for Harold. And that Harold has always had hearts in his eyes for Annie. Lesson 5. Make her feel special.
I think you need to read that again in a huskier voice, please.
Lesson 5. Make her feel special. I'm proud.
Yeah.
Thank you for your direction. I appreciate it. Harold is making Annie a smoothie in his kitchen, and it's delicious. And I'm tempted to skip this entire section and just rhapsodize about him not having to take the blender off the base and unit because it has a motherfucking spigot attached to it. What? How amazing is that? He just nonchalantly is like, pull that spigot, fill those cups, pull that spigot, fill those cups. What the hell?
I think that's all you need to say about that section. Everything was overshadowed by the goddamn blender.
Yes, I totally agree. But focusing back in, Annie suggests that he's probably looking to kick up his relationship a notch, so he should do something nice for her. Nothing too fancy. He knows that she likes to go to the city, so he suggests taking her to a nice dinner. A look of, he doesn't need me anymore, flashes across her face, but then she pulls herself together and suggests a restaurant that she hasn't been to in a while, so maybe they should go there together, you know, for research. Yeah, research. That's what it is. So they go out on a pre-date. They go to the restaurant, and it is perfect. Personally, I think it's a little too fancy, but, you know, whatever. It's perfect. Annie is dressed in a glittery something and Harold in a suit, and they look beautifully fancy together.
I was like, did you steal that jacket from Ella, the editor, in Advice to Love By? sequence. That is our last movie, dear listeners, where they were having their own little shopping montage and one of the characters kept pulling a buttload of sequins off the shelves. It was amazing. And next we see Miss Dun-da-da-da Annie wearing a sequins jacket. So I was just curious.
Maybe her personal shopper is the editor from Advice to Love By.
Why not?
Why not? Harold gives Annie her last payment, and Annie sets it aside and then turns to Harold. So, that dance we went to? We danced together, right? Harold says, no, and Annie's face falls. Harold continues, you had invited a bunch of your friends along, and I didn't really fit in with them. When I finally worked up the courage to ask you, it was too late. Matt Snyder swooped in and asked you instead. Hot. Popular. Matt Snyder. Annie is surprised, seeing how much he is still affected by this experience that happened about 20 years ago. Matt Snyder? You remember that? Harold's face is filled with sadness. It's not something you forget. Annie apologizes and says that that wasn't her intention. She was 15 and was just trying to have a good time. She has a bit of a moment looking at the woman in the mirror. She pauses a moment and says, if it makes you feel any better, you're doing way better than me in life. Harold is a softie. He looks at Annie sweetly with a trace of sadness in his eyes and says,
"What? Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie? Annie, are you okay?
You've been touched by, you've been something, a smooth kernel." Yeah, he does not say that, but thank you for the interlude.
I can't help it. Her name's Annie, and I need to know if she's okay.
Annie, not of, of Michael Jackson's Smooth Criminal. He looks at her and says, "You are the prettiest girl in high school. It's only a matter of time before someone sweeps you off your feet, and somebody's going to hire you soon for events. I've seen your work, and it's really good." Tamara begs to differ, but, you know, I have stronger I have stronger connections than her, so I'm the one that really counts, Harold says.
Mm. Well, Harold, if you heard my proposal earlier about being a therapist, maybe you can hook me up with your therapist connections to get me some clients, too. Why not?
Ooh, I like it. Harold continues, "You just have to believe in yourself." He smiles softly at her. "I know I do." Annie smiles and shakes her head. "Did you just give me my own advice?" They chuckle. Later, they move on to a bar and have some drinks and talk Rat Pack, jazz, and oldies, but goodies. Annie hears a jazz song. "I wanna be kissed," sings a bluesy voice through the bar, and she gestures, "You know, this could be our song." The song a couple picks to be their song. He likes the idea of having a song, but Annie, you don't pick out other couples' songs. Just FYI.
I mean, you should be able to, though.
Oh, really?
Oftentimes you have a perspective on other people's relationships that they may not see.
Yeah, it's true. For you and Dan, it's always been Buffalo Soldier, red like Rasta.
Our song was "It's the Final Countdown." Diddle-dee-dee.
Diddle-dee-dee-dee. That's sexy.
Mm-hmm. This next section, Annie and Claire talk again. Why do I get all the Annie and Claire conversations?
Because you have a sister that's alive.
No, ouch. Wow. You just strategically like, let's split out the ally. No, that's yours. You take that one. That's your section.
It's just the way it worked out. And I don't think that those sections were bad sections. It's not like when you left me with all the crazy racist sections in the proposal. She's still smiling smugly about.
Yeah, that was awesome. Like, don't have to deal with that. Don't have to deal with that. Don't have to deal with that. Fine, then I will plow through. Annie is at her sister's house in a dark kitchen, sitting at the kitchen island, sipping a hot beverage when her sister comes in wearing jammies. "Hey," she says, "it's late." But Annie is preoccupied with her thoughts. "You okay?" Claire asks. "You've been putting in some late nights and you look tired." Her sister finally looks up with a, "Huh?" She wasn't fully listening, but I think that... Oh, no, I'm not going to read that. I was angry when I wrote that.
Somebody needs a little therapizing themselves.
Yeah. I need to look at the woman in the mirror.
I think we all do.
But no. Annie assures her sister that she's fine. "Well," Claire says, "don't stay up too late." And before she gets through the door, Annie calls out to her, "I know I haven't been the best sister, and I haven't pulled my weight. Things haven't worked out the way I'd hoped, and it's hard out there, but I wanted to say, I'm sorry." Claire's face softens, and she nods and murmurs an, "Okay." "But that's not all," Annie continues. "You're doing a great job with the kids and your family, with everything. I'm so proud of you." Claire's eyes get a little glassy. This is having more of an effect on her than Annie's apology. They bid each other good night, and perhaps Claire finally heard the words she always wanted to hear from her little sister. Lesson six is getting close.
Oh, yeah.
Annie drives up to Harold's house and takes particular interest in how she looks today. She's fluffing her hair a little bit more. She's fixing her makeup. What's going on? She goes inside and Harold is preoccupied looking at his newest batch of photographs. Annie comes up behind him, sees them, and gasps, "Oh, are these new?" Harold nods. "These are amazing," she continues. "They don't belong here. They belong in a museum." Harold's basking in all her praises as she circles his entryway and studies some of his framed work that's on his wall. She turns abruptly from one of his pieces and almost smacks "yoga hug first" into Harold. Actually, it was chest first, but since I heard that new phrase, I wanted to incorporate it somewhere in the story.
I like it.
almost smacks chest first into Harold. They titter awkwardly, and she says, if he's ready, he is. She walks to the living room while he checks his breath. He sits on the couch in front of her, and she informs him that their next lesson is getting close, a.k.a. getting to first base. There's some tension in the room, and Harold asks quietly, this is the most important step. How do you propose we do it? Well, she declares, the most important thing is eye contact and reading body language. You should wait for a time during the day when you're close together. Harold throws his arm around behind the couch and semi around her and starts shimmying slowly towards her. And for all that is holy, she says, do not do that stretching thing and putting your arm around a girl. That's tacky. She's not talking to him directly, but he immediately draws his arm back and looks down sheepishly. So, she continues, most importantly, use your eyes. They both make some deep eye contact, right on the outskirts of eye fucking, or fucking with their eyes. As she continues, you look at a girl. If she's looking at you the same way, she's giving you the green light. They're both flashing bold green lights at each other. Verdi, Verdi, Verdi! They lean closer, and Harold breathes, what next?
They're going the distance. They're going for speed.
I have to say that what next part, I was still laughing at my stupid joke. Harold breathes, what next? Well, you just move closer, she says, and demonstrates by leaning towards him. Then they kind of fucking kiss, and it's pretty goddamn hot.
Oh, it's so hot.
It's a good kiss. It's a good damn kiss.
Good kiss.
They both linger a little bit too long at the end, and Annie assures him, that was great, and asks, how do you feel? He says, okay. And she balks, just okay. He tries to backpedal. Isn't that how I'm supposed to feel? This statement makes her remember herself. Oh, yeah, no, you should totally feel okay about what just happened. But just to be safe, let's try it a few more times.
No, Tamara's not making that up. She says that.
Let's try it a few more times.
For research, yeah.
For research. And that prompted me to propose a new feature here at ODK.
Oh.
A date coaching site.
Is that because you want to be kissing guys?
Yes, I do. Do you need help getting dates? Are you a shy old soul that knows how to cook and has a romantic spirit? Do you need somebody to make out with you on the couch, you know, for practice? Do you frequently and freely use the phrase winky winky? Then we're the dating coaches for you. Here at ODK Date Coaching, our staff, namely Corinne, will guide you all through the ins and outs of dating because Tamara hasn't done it in quite some time. Except for the practice makeouts. I can for sure help with that. Do you need kiss coaching, dry or otherwise? Maybe a reach around? Or do you need to be felt up so you can anticipate what to do on your next first date? We will be there for you. And just included today, yoga hugs.
Oh, you made my heart so happy.
Okay, well, that's just something I wanted to pitch. Didn't have to necessarily do it on this podcast, but Corinne, are you with me?
I'm with you. We're doing it. We've got our party planning services. We've got something else going on. and kiss coaching. Dating coaching. The whole nine. It's going to be amazing.
We contain multitudes here
at
ODK.
Yes, we do.
A few nights later, Harold is taking Julie to that same romantic restaurant in the city. They finish up their meal, and Harold remarks, you've been kind of quiet tonight. Is everything okay? She nods noncommittally. Yeah, everything was fine. I just wish we could have done more, like clubbing or going to a show or something. And I say, bitch, you were already thinking that at the beginning of dinner. Why don't you wait till afterwards and then propose you guys do something else instead of having a sourpuss face because you guys are just having a romantic dinner? I'm like, this girl is definitely a hot dog cart girl, Corinne. I was like, who the hell wants to go out on a date to a hot dog cart? It's definitely Julie. That's the Julie meal.
I don't think that she does want to go out to a hot dog cart.
It seems like she doesn't want to eat or be seated. She wants to be moving and shaking and hemming and hawing. I don't know. Like, she just wants to be out and about. So I don't think she wants to be confined by sit-down dining.
Oh.
Because I would love to just go, like, even if it's a romantic, quiet restaurant, and I'm like, I really feel like doing something more outlandish today. Like, you might get a good meal. Shut up and eat.
Basically, what Tamara is saying is that she's bitter because he's an awesome guy and he's taking out this woman who is not appreciating the fact that he's taking her out to a really nice place for a really good meal.
Mm-hmm. And all the times that we've had our previous episodes where a guy's like, I'm going to take you to the best spot in town. And then he takes her to a hot dog cart. And I'm like, no, no, don't want that. I want fine dining, sit down restaurant, 3 courses at least. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I just texted you this week. Hot dog.
I know. I'm like, bite me, Corinne. Bite me and my hot dog. So she wants to go clubbing or to a show, and he assures her that they can do that next time. As they stand up to go, he proposes, or we can go to my place. I know I've been told I'm a pretty good cook, and we can eat and dance. She likes the sound of that. They lean in for a soft kiss, and I'm just going to foreshadow here with a big what the fuck. If she was crawling out of her skin at their romantic dinner out, what makes her think she's going to enjoy a quiet dinner at his house? At first, I was like, well, there's the obvious that they're going to hook up, but this is a Hallmark movie, so that's not going to happen. So what the hell?
She thought that the dinner was going to be a prelude to more things happening afterwards. It's the end of the evening at the restaurant, and Annie is staring off into nothingness while Kim gets ready to leave. What's going on with you? You look... Wait a minute. Who's the guy? And does he have a friend that looks like Ben Affleck? Annie admits that she's thinking about Harold. He's not who I thought he was at all. He's an amazing photographer, great cook, smart, and romantic. And all this time, I thought he was a nobody. And oh my God, I'm a horrible person. Kim assures her that she isn't, although I think some of the reflecting that she's been doing due to her interactions with Harold has been good for her personal development. She has been horrible and not thinking of others, and I think she's finally starting to see that. She's taking a look at the woman in the mirror. Anywho, Kim says that Annie has feelings for Harold and that she shouldn't dismiss them. Annie says that there's no way that she could ever compare to the beautiful and accomplished Julie. Kim pish-poshes Annie. Tam's like, bitch, you liked the meal. You were happy with that. Nice little drink afterwards.
Julie's a party girl.
Mm-mm. I know she is. Woof.
Party, party, party.
Kim pish-poshes Annie, says she should follow her heart, and leaves. Now, gentle listeners, I must give you an awkward date alert. I understand that they're in that beginning, let's see if this thing's a thing stage, but oof. The nice thing to come out of the dinner that Harold makes for Julie is he refers Julie to Annie for a fancy event gig in the city. However, the rest of the evening is a combination of heartbreaking and awkward. She wants to know what they're doing after dinner, and he said he was thinking of hanging out, putting on some records, maybe dancing a little. She is way more interested in going out clubbing. She looks at him coyly. Anything I can do to change your mind?
I know. Using all that coyly talk to try to get him to take you out clubbing? Okay.
Oh. I'll show you, okay.
You don't even know about this fist bump. You don't even know.
Sinatra's old folk music. Harold sadly and amiably agrees.
Lesson 7 is compromise.
Ooh.
Harold meets Annie at the park where she's watching Megan, her niece, climb the shit out of a jungle gym. Harold crosses the park and hands everybody hot beverages. And when Annie sees him, she leaps into his arms. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I got that job as an event planner, and it's in the city.
Aww.
She thanks him for the coffee, and he says, you're welcome for the coffee and the job. And she remembers why he's there. So how was your date last night? Dancing and romantic dinner swept her off her feet? Huh? Huh? He tells her sadly no, that's not really her thing. She always wants to go out and do something and be somewhere. She's a party girl. Party girl!
She's a party girl
in a party world. Oh, but she's a party girl in the Hallmark world, so that is not a good mix make.
No.
Annie nods sadly and adds, you know, this might be perfect. Now we can go over the next lesson. Compromise. You guys are finally seeing each other's differences. And since you gave in to her and went out dancing, she should do something that you enjoy. In a perfect world, that's really how it should happen, but it doesn't always. No personal feelings behind that.
But I actually love that they bring this up kind of twice in the movie, because she sort of brings it up earlier when she's like, you should tell her the things that you're interested in and da la 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 la. And in this one, she's like, she should do things that you're interested in as well. And I love how she goes for that, like, you don't have to like the same things all the time or anything like that, but you should want to be doing some of the things that the other person wants to do, particularly as a way to show interest. And I really like that she brought that up as something that was important, because I think it really is.
Yeah. In a perfect world, it is important. The person that you're with should do stuff that you like some of the time. Not all the time. Not every day. Not even once a week, maybe. But
you're like, once a month would be awesome even.
I would be fine with once a month.
Twitch, twitch, twitch.
Don't have any personal feelings around this. I'm fine. I am not breaking out in hives because of this section. I'm allergic to something. Anyways. So, Julie went out dancing. Now she needs to do something that Harold enjoys. But he looks dubious. Really? Yes, Annie assures him. When people like each other, they find ways to be together, even if it means compromise. And who wouldn't want to spend time with you, Harold? He takes a long drink from his coffee and admits, that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. She gets a sparkle in her eye, and it's too good for Harold to pass up. He grabs his camera from around his neck and starts snapping pictures of her. She playfully pleads for him to stop, but as he continues...
Oh, no! You don't have her taking her clothes off, do you?
No, I have Harold sadistically shouting at her, Annie, if I take your picture perfectly, you'll never leave me. You'll be with me forever, just like my photographs. And I can mount you on the wall.
How very Dorian Gray of him.
He doesn't say that, but he continues clicking, saying, I can't. These are too beautiful to pass up. She pretends to fight it, but eventually starts posing a little bit with coffee in hand. And after he is spent... on photos, that is. He remembers that he's taking pictures tomorrow and asks, would you like to come along? She blurts out an awkward why. Because, he says, smiling softly, I like spending time with you. She says yes, and he says, great, I will pick you up tomorrow at 5 a.m. Wait, what? Harold, you have to divulge the time if it's ridiculous 1:00 in the morning before you propose the activity. That is just courtesy.
I had like serious Baker's son flashbacks to when in that movie he was like, okay, and come on over at like 4 a.m. for some fresh bread.
Oh, it's even like, wait, this could have gone like completely sideways because Harold's taking her to the woods at 5 a.m. with nobody else around. And we had a whole conspiracy theory about some true crime related activities that could happen at that hour of the day with nobody else around. And they're in a fucking forest already. I'm just saying.
Oh.
Nope, not that kind of movie. The next day at 5:00 in the morning, Harold is sitting behind a tripod snapping shots of a beautiful serene mountain ridge nestled behind a misty lake. Annie asks why they're out here so early, and he shares that at this time of the day, everything's golden. And it makes things beautiful, but it only happens at sunrise and sunset. He moves to the side so she could take a peek in his viewfinder, and she oohs and ahs. When she straightens back up, she admits, I really feel free out here. And Harold nods slowly. Me too. It's like you're up before the world. They share a quiet moment before she asks, you know that fundraiser I'm doing is to save national parks. And I was thinking we could probably use some of your beautiful landscape photos. Harold gives her the eye. Really? Yeah, why not? We're trying to save the parks. Wouldn't it be a good idea to have photographs of them all over the place? And you'd get great exposure. He's downplaying it, but you can tell by the expression on his face that he is jazzed. He mutters a subdued, oh, yeah, that'd be great. And Annie playfully elbows him and they giggle at each other.
I actually think it was a good idea.
It was a great idea.
Sometimes in Hallmark movies where they're like, you know what? I have this great idea. And I'm like, I don't really think that's such a good idea.
That's a bad idea.
But this one, I was like, oh, this actually works. And his landscapes look like actual landscapes versus who knows what.
I have a good idea. I think we should get all the townspeople to help pick my apple orchard with baskets the size of teacups. Huh? Huh? No?
That's a fantastic idea. Back at Harold's house, he is leafing through his images, picking ones for the event. Annie points out the magic hour, that time of day in the evening and the morning when the light is perfect and golden. How everything is soft and glowy in one of the images. And he's surprised and delighted that she's paid attention, as opposed to Julie. He turns up the volume on the record he's playing and asks her to dance. She initially says no, but he turns the guilt up to 11, cajoling her and saying that Julie isn't interested in dancing to this type of music and Matt Schneider isn't here to steal you away. After laughing and saying that she can't believe that he's guilt-tripping her, she relents and says, I guess I owe you one, and they dance. She asks if after the high school dance, he walked her to the door and kissed her goodnight, and he says, no. She sat in the front seat with his mom and waved goodbye after she got out of the car, and that was probably the last time they talked in high school. Teenage her obviously wasn't interested in him. What kind of drugs was she taking to think he kissed her? I have no idea, but they must have been mighty powerful.
She was probably like, did you kiss me? Let's play along with this fantasy I have in my head that we were like star-crossed lovers way back in high school. Did you kiss me, Harold? I said, did you kiss me? Wait, and he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, me. No, yeah, I kissed you.
Oh, was it like this?
I kissed you hard and I kissed you good. Yeah, that's what I think. Maybe she's trying to like direct their narrative into a different way. Ooh. Something that didn't happen, maybe.
Something she'll feel less guilty about.
Mm-hmm.
In the modern day.
That too.
They hold each other closer and rock back and forth. Yoga hugs don't have anything on that dance.
Yoga hugs.
Later, Willie is in Harold's office getting tax advice when he notices one of Harold's photographs. Fear not, Tamara. I will mention that Big Red, aka Little Willie, was there, right there nestled lovingly in his ear the entire time. Willie moves the big photo aside, and underneath it are a bunch of snapshots of Annie in full color. This isn't Julie, Willie observes. Does someone have a crush on their coach? Harold quickly covers it up, tells him, no, go to work on your taxes, and ushers him out. Lesson 8, follow your heart. Annie brings him leftover banana cream pie from work with a candle. Obviously, his graduation must be celebrated. She toasts him with pie, telling him he's officially a heartthrob and one of the nicest guys she knows, and wishes him all the happiness in the world. He toasts her back and tells her he learned from the best, and he feels lucky to have had lessons from the prettiest girl in high school that he always had a crush on. She is surprised by this for some reason and smiles happily. Then she shares her final lesson, her golden rule. Oh. When in doubt, trust your gut, follow your heart, and always be honest with yourself and with the person you're with.
The next morning, Harold brings Julie out to the same spot to take pictures. And from the get-go, she's not feeling it. Ugh, my shoes are getting ruined, and it's so muddy. Why is it so wet? Are we there yet? They finally get to the spot. Harold sets up his tripod, and she is positively vibrating to go. Can we leave yet? Are you done? Did you get all your pictures? He looks through his viewfinder and admits, "This isn't exactly what I wanted. The light's not right. We got here too late." She shrugs behind crossed arms. "Sorry, the party went late last night. I didn't get to bed till about 2 a.m. A.K.A. party girl." He looks through his viewfinder one more time and then drops his camera disappointedly. "Everything okay?" Julie asks. "No, it's not," Harold admits. "I'm not going to get anything that I want." "Great," she exclaims. "Then let's go." He nods sadly and they shuffle off out of the wilderness with Julie moving a little more enthusiastically than when she first got there. Later that night, Harold is passing by Annie's work when he glances through the window and sees her hugging Matt Schneider.
Matt Schneider?
He throws his hand up in the air, curls his fingers into a tight fist. "Matt motherfucking Schneider, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. Trail, trail." After their long lingering hug, Annie and Matt say goodbye. Annie goes back to the kitchen and Matt walks out of the restaurant door, which is right next to where Harold is standing. When Matt passes him, Harold glares at him with, "I'm gonna fuck you up if I knew how to fight," eyes. But he does nothing, actually. Well, he does nothing but go over to Kim and ask, "What's that guy's name? Is it Matt Schneider?" Kim agrees good-naturedly. "Yeah, do you know him?" "He most certainly does." He hurries towards the door, but before he can leave in a huff, Annie sees him and calls out, "Harold, hey, I didn't even know you were here." He has an icy facade that she's not used to. "Everything okay?" she asks hesitantly. And he answers brusquely, "Yeah, okay, yeah, you?" She nods slowly, not sure what to make, and then remembers she has good news. "Hey, I got an apartment in the city," she says, beaming. Harold's response is measured. "So when do you move?" "Next week," she says. "Well," he answers with obvious restraint, "it looks like everything's finally coming together for you. Congratulations." "Yeah," she agrees, confused. "And thank you so much for getting me that job." Just then his phone rings, and it's Julie. He excuses himself and leaves the restaurant and Annie standing there confused as to what she did wrong, because there was a cold front that just blew in the restaurant and his name was Harold.
Ooh, and we're bringing it on home.
Bringing it on home.
Woot woot, woot woot. Annie comes home from work to her sister waiting for her downstairs again.
Uh-oh.
Annie tells her, "I'm going to be leaving tomorrow. There's no reason for me to stay any longer." But Claire has a change of heart. "You can stay here if you want." Annie is all full of, "What the fuck?"
"Oh, sure, Claire. Right when I get the goddamn apartment, the lease is signed, I'm ready to move out, I'm going tomorrow. Now you're going to tell me I can stay? Seriously? Seriously?"
"No, you don't have any feelings." "No feelings. No feelings whatsoever. You're fine. Totally chill, totally neutral on the thing."
This movie did nothing for me. It did not move me at all.
Claire explains that she had been a bitter Betty, being the responsible older sister of haughty, carefree Annie. Felt like a chore she grew up with. Annie being the cherished one while she felt left behind. Annie tells her to shut that shit down because everyone was always asking her why she couldn't be more like Claire. And that was hard. Claire tells Annie that she's so proud of Annie for going after all the things that Claire wasn't brave enough to go after. And Annie sincerely says that she thinks Claire is very accomplished and enviable, having a home and a family and all the things that really matter. They realize they both wanted a bit of what the other person had. They say how much they love each other and become better sisters in the process. The more you know, please. After their beautiful conversation, Claire looks at Annie and says, "What's wrong?" Annie confesses that she's a bit heartbroken because the man of her dreams is already taken. That's Harold, by the way, if you hadn't picked up on that. Meanwhile, Harold and Julie meet up with each other. Harold tries to break up with her, but she beats him to the punch. She says they're two very different people and should stop seeing each other. Harold is thrilled, not that they're not seeing each other, but that they're on the same page, and thanks for your honesty. She's a little offended that he's not heartbroken and kind of abruptly walks off and leaves. And I'm like, yeah, Harold, yeah. Annie is at her event setting everything up in the ballroom, round banquet tables with burgundy tablecloths and giant candelabras surround the room. All along the wall are Harold's photos. Malcolm Winters, you know, Malcolm Winters. The Malcolm Winters.
Am I supposed to know Malcolm Winters?
They assume that we're supposed to know Malcolm Winters, but they do not ever elaborate on his significance.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Malcolm Winters.
Malcolm Winters. He introduces himself to Annie and compliments her on Harold's photos. He also basically gives her a big job planning his company's Diamond Jubilee and hands her his card. Meanwhile, Harold goes to Claire's house to drop off the photos that he took of Annie. He's also included essentially a Dear John letter for Annie as well. Claire asks why he's not going to the event. He tells Claire that he can't be rejected by Annie again. And Claire tells him he's stupid, that Annie likes him. Her daughter spills the beans. Annie told Mommy that you were the man of her dreams. So he obviously has only one choice. Off to the gala! After changing into
a suit. To the gala!
At the function, the Malcolm Winters wants to introduce everyone to the photographer that made the pictures around the wall. He asks Harold to come up to the front and calls his name a few times, but he's not there. However, at the last minute, Harold comes in. He goes up to the front of the room and uses his moment to talk about Annie to everyone. He says he likes his life so much more with her in it, and he'd like to keep it that way. Annie has tears in her eyes. She's so touched. Harold turns to the DJ and says to Annie, and I agree, this should be our song, and asks her to dance.
And you hear across the speakers, nch, 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 nch. But alas, it's not, because this is the Hallmark universe.
And it's actually the lovely song. The DJ apparently just knows what to do and starts playing Dinah Washington singing I Want to Be Loved with inspiration. He asks her if this could be their song as they dance together. And then they kiss and they kiss and they kiss some more.
Yes, 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 yes.
The end.
The end.
Woo! What did you think of this movie?
Oh my gosh, I enjoyed it so much. I'm going to give it 4 dry kisses. I just was in love with Eric Mabius, a.k.a. Harold. I really liked Brooke D'Orsay. Yeah. I like their dynamic. I like their chemistry. I like the slow build. It was really believable. They gave good love tips that I might actually want to love by and not throw in the trash and stamp hard on it with my foot. Diversity was Willie and his earpiece, and that was it. But
yes,
Catherine Najimy was a revelation.
Oh, she's so good.
The relationship between Annie and her sister Claire just gave me all the feels. Mm-hmm. So hard. Did not realize that. So I'm going to give it a good 4 dry kisses.
Yeah, I feel like the sister relationship, they had some really good sister conversations in meaningful
that
ways.
That I felt hard.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think, Corinne?
I actually completely agree with you on every single level that you said, so I actually do not need to repeat myself, but like literally would have said the same thing if I had gone first, except would have been much wordier about it. So congratulations on being concise. And
oh, we got our first second rating of samesies. Oh, okay. So what did you think, Corinne? Samesies. Perfect.
Samesies. I do wish it had been more diverse. That would be the one thing that I would really give it a come on. Seriously, y'all? Mm-hmm. Seriously. But other than that, it was great. And I felt like the younger versions of them were really good. Oh, I did have one thing that I wanted to contribute was this movie also gave me a lot of feels as somebody who was who was not socially in the mix throughout school. So I felt really isolated and I felt really ignored. And I was in so many situations where I felt like young Harold. And when he talks about sort of feeling the way that, like, in the present that he does then, finally, I'm way less like that now. But when I was in my 20s, definitely, even when I was in my 30s, definitely still felt very much that way. And even now, if I'm in certain social situations, I can be like punted down to that in like, you know, in a hot second. If like somebody's being mean girl to me or, you know, mean boy to me, I can suddenly just feel like I'm that 14-year-old all over again. So I thought they did a really nice job of kind of showing that side of things.
Yeah, I agree. Totally.
But really what sold it for me was his clothing changes. Like after his makeover, I was like, who is that man? I don't even recognize him anymore.
Oh gosh. It was just like, what's her face in Advice to Love By when she pulls up her bangs. And I'm like, they got a new girl. Oh, it's the same girl. Damn.
Or like, what, Leah, you know, that movie, that Vineyard movie where she keeps on getting her hair cut whenever she's upset.
Oh my God.
Rachel Lee Cook.
In the Vineyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rachel Lee Cook and her many similar haircuts.
Where absolutely no length goes anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
She's like one of those Play-Doh dolls where you like, where you push down on the chair and more hair grows.
And the hair grows back. You can just keep cutting and cutting. Hours of fun. Next time we are doing the Dater's Handbook. Not if I have anything to do with it and my photoshopping skills, huh?
If you have anything you'd like to say about anything about the movie that we just covered, Advice to Love By, please let us know. You can reach out to us at wonderykiss@gmail.com. You can also emailing us. You can also reach us by Instagram, Twitter, and the Facebook, all at wonderykiss.
One is spelled O-N-E, and as always, we would love any ratings and reviews you could throw our way anywhere we listen, where we listen to this podcast. Not you, just us. Anywhere you listen to this podcast. And as always, thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
You're like, you're going to sit there and you're going to suffer. Don't get up.
We have to get through this. Suck it up. Suck it up. Just put an eye patch on. You'll be fine.
I know. Are you crying, Tam? Are you crying? There's no crying in podcasting. I'm not crying. I got crap in my eye and it's wiring. You won't let me get up and wash it out.
There's no crying in podcasting. I didn't get that memo. Oh, no.
We're too far in for that to actually apply to us. We're too far gone.